We plan to talk through the issues faced by startup founders and the people close to them.
That overused phrase, work-life balance.
It is an amazingly focusing time.
This is what we do, you know, aside from our families, this is our whole work life.
I am also known as Dr. Wine.
You know, this is a little bit non-traditional.
A little more zen in the startup life. Zen founder.
Those days were a mental struggle.
I have been stressed in the past, and I know that I will be in the future.
A founder and his or her significant other will both get value from the episode.
Went home to California for the holidays. Minneapolis is a bit cold right now. In fact, I think with wind chill, it was minus 26 today. And so for the past, 9 or 10 days, we were staying in Santa Cruz and then in the East Bay. And we saw a bunch of old friends and a bunch of old family.
Old family? I'm sure your mother is offended that you said that.
I was just saying that as a joke.
Yucca, yucca. Yeah, so like 65 degrees when you are a Californian is like cold to be at the beach. But when you've been in Minnesota for a while, that's a totally fine temperature to be at the beach.
Well, you and our youngest were in wetsuits, because so we packed our wetsuits. So we never check bags, right? That's our thing. We have small bags. We carry them on. But we had 4 wetsuits that we wanted to bring, and we checked a bag for that. And you and our youngest were in the water in Santa Cruz in essentially end of December. And the water was cold, but you boogie boarded for extended periods of time.
It wasn't that cold once you got moving. And it's just so fun. And it's something that he and I love to do together. So I think a good wetsuit is a very good investment if you like to play in the water in the Pacific.
Yeah. So that was fun. It was fun to get back to California for a bit and see family. And that's what this episode is about. It's about post-holiday recovery, but more than that, it's about family systems. And it's about how to think about as you get older, you know, when you revisit and see family members or, you know, your brothers, sisters, your parents, when you see them, it's pretty often that you revert back to kind of being a kid. And that's what we're going to talk about today, because it's easy to fall into kind of the traps or the tropes of where you were when you were 15. And there are pluses and minuses to that. And so we have some theoretical bent. That's the cool part of today, is like you've put together an outline as a trained clinical psychologist, you know, who has studied this and who has experience in learning about family systems and the research on it. And then we also have some very specific coping skills that you and I have developed to kind of get out of the house, in essence, and have some alone time, especially if you're an introvert, to be able to kind of feel fulfilled. Because, you know, when there's a lot of people around, it's often easy to get overwhelmed and to not give yourself time and space to basically kind of debrief and mellow out and then come back more energized.
Yeah, we probably should have recorded this episode like before the holidays. I think that would have been more helpful to people. But I guess one of the values of this conversation is to normalize if you feel a little bit like your world has been rocked after spending time with family over the holidays. Even if you have the best family that you just love and you get along with really well, it can be pretty tricky to re-engage with your family for a long period of time and still come out of that experience feeling like the fully developed grown-up that you were when you went into it.
Right. Because often during these holiday times, we're trying to get away from work. We're trying to relax. We're trying to get to a place where it feels more relaxing, right? And you're trying to come away from it recharged. And so it's a bummer if you take that 1 week that you have and you go and spend it with friends or family. I mean, it's not just slimy family here, but to spend it with folks and then come away with your kind of the life drained out of you, right? Where you like don't have the energy to come back and engage in work.
One of the things that I found myself doing on our trip, and we spent 10 days in a house that we rented in Santa Cruz, and a chunk of that was spent with my parents and my brother and his wife. And then we had some other friends kind of cycle through and spend time with us there. So it was very lovely, actually. The house was nice. Everybody sort of had enough room, and overall very good experiences. But I found myself doing a couple of things that are not totally typical of me. One is that, you know, people would be sort of sitting around in the living room watching a movie or talking, and I would pick up like some canvas paper and some paints and just kind of keep myself busy working on something, like still being in the room and still sort of being part of the conversation. But I was kind of distracting myself or like engaged in this, some little funny paintings that I was working on. And normally I'm kind of all in a conversation and bright eyed and engaged in every piece of the conversation. So that's a departure for me. And I was just like sort of reflecting on how often I did that as a kid to kind of be in the room, but also engaging in my own thoughts and inner world and a little bit separate or shut down from what was happening in the room. So I felt myself getting pulled back into that kind of like 13-year-old, 10-year-old, maybe even 8-year-old coping strategy that I developed all those years ago.
Do you think that's similar to like picking up a cell phone and doing, you know, whatever it is that you do on a phone, whether it's Facebook, Twitter, or checking email or that kind of stuff?
For me, no, at least not the way that I use social media. I think for me, some of the conversations that can happen around the table with my family are, they're either frustrating to me or they're hard for me to be engaged in. And I think what I was doing was reminding myself of my own inner life, not my social connections to other people outside the family.
Yeah. And I think there's a difference. I mean, it's interesting you point that out, because the first day or two we got to Santa Cruz, we basically, you and I went to an art store and you purchased paints and some, they weren't canvases, but it's like canvas paper. It's like a thick thing of paper. And you said, I'm going to do some painting because this is what you've been doing for the past 6 months. And that, it was a very deliberate decision up front. And then you would set it up and start painting in advance. People would come in and you'd have a conversation while you were painting, because you could do both. It wasn't as if you were in the middle of a conversation like some people do, and suddenly, you know, you're looking at your phone, like zoning out, monkey braining, right, on Facebook or Twitter.
No, I still wanted to be present for the conversation, but there's an element of separateness that's important for me to maintain.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, I think, you know, part of this trip back to California included not only Santa Cruz, but I went and saw my family and they live in the East Bay. And I went to my dad's house, and I haven't been, this is a house I grew up in since I was four. So it's really the only house I remember. And it was a lot different than I remember. I haven't been there in about 10 years, and it's definitely, you know, there's more clutter and the house is getting older. I mean, there's just things that change over the years. And It was eye-opening to realize how different I live today than I did when I was a kid, and to remember some of the struggles I had as a child of wanting things, you know, whatever it is in your mind. It's like sometimes you want to be more organized and other people are less, or you want to be less and they're too type A, or, you know, there's always something. But it was apparent in the house that I was like, oh, this is very different from the way I live today. And I'm glad that I'm in control of kind of where we are. And I think that leads us into this whole question. I mean, this is where we get into the meat of this episode, which is like, why? Like, we think about corporations or companies and how we build our startups very deliberately. And there's obviously, there's a hierarchy, there are cultures in a startup, there are rules about how to interact with people, all this stuff. The thing is, there's the exact same things about families are in place. It's just they're unspoken. I don't feel like people are nearly as deliberate about this as they are when they're building companies. And, you know, coming back to the intro, like you know about this, about the kind of the theoretical and the research that's been done about this. So let's dive into that, about like how families are organized and what that looks like and what the impact is on those of us who are members of families.
Well, yeah, families are a system. They're, you know, this composite of these smaller parts, and the way that those pieces of the system work together, those are highly kind of nuanced and also unique in each family system. And I think that, you know, the analogy that you make to a startup is a good one. And think about how much founders think about, or how much you spend time kind of developing a culture in your business and the way that you want it to run, the way that you want people to interact. That happens in families, even at more intimate, more detailed levels. So I think one of the things that makes time with family as a grown-up sort of tricky is that there's a hierarchy in the family. Well, or a hierarchy can be very structured, like the parents are this sort of clear leaders of the family, or a hierarchy can be more flat, where the family is more collaborative. So families are all different in the way that they set up the structures, in the differences between siblings, in the way that each child relates to the parents or to one parent versus another parent. So there's a fairly complex web of how a family is organized hierarchically in terms of like who's connected to who and who tells secrets to who and who can kind of backsass and talk to who and, you know, like what are the rules that govern the nature of the relationships between individuals and the family.
And is that why it's so hard to go back for the holidays? Because at this point, you become 25, 30, 35, 40, whatever it is. And when you go back, you might be running your own startup and you're married and you're in charge of everything and you make all these decisions. And then you go back and suddenly the hierarchy's there again.
Like my mom's still asking me if I need to go to the bathroom before we leave the house to go to dinner.
Right. Did she do that?
Yes.
Oh, my. And it's like, I have traveled Africa.
I've been bathrooming on my own for like 35 years now.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny. Right. But you can't blame her because I ask our kids that all the time. Right. And it's like, it's hard to change those parenting, the instincts of you have to ask, are you okay? Are you willing to eat this? You know, this strange food we're going to have, quote unquote strange. You know, do you need to go to the bathroom? Do I need to wash your face? And it's like, at what point do you cut that off as a parent?
Well, it's tricky because, you know, in my family, I think my mom still maintains some of that maternal hierarchy. Like, you know, she still asks those questions and sort of wants to take care of us. And my dad's like, you're on your own, chumps. Like, you know, there's not that same level of, like the hierarchy is flat with him now. It wasn't when we were kids, but with my mom, she's still this sort of mom caretaker of everybody. So it's funny, but I also feel the hierarchy with my siblings because I'm the oldest and man, I just always feel like the oldest. I always feel like the, okay, here's our plan for the day. Here's what we're doing. Come on, guys. And that role, you know, I fall back into really quickly when I'm with my family. And so it doesn't, you know, the hierarchy gets tricky, especially as we age, because, you know, depending on our parents' health or well-being, we might find ourselves as adults now being more of the caretaker in that relationship or more of the parent in that relationship. And that, so that changes with time. The nature of our relationships with our siblings changes over time. So these things, the system shifts as time passes. So it can be kind of confusing to go back into the system and not have this like preset structure and hierarchy of how everybody can, should quote unquote, be interacting with each other.
And so to bring this back to kind of being at home with family, like what is a way to cope with that? You know, like if I go back and I feel frustrated by the fact that my mom or dad or both treat me like I'm 15 and I'm kind of like, guys, I run my own company, like back off type thing. Hypothetically speaking, of course, what's a way to deal with that and cope with it?
You know, I think the best case scenario is just to have a good sense of humor about it. Like my mom doesn't care that you run your own company. She just doesn't. And you are not that to her. You are your little Robbie who, you know, had the big brown eyes and played soccer with your blonde hair and very short shorts. Like your mom will always
short
see
shorts. What do you wait? Well, hold on.
Sorry. Never mind. That's probably not the right mom reference.
No, it's not.
I'm just Robbie? Thinking of this picture of you that's in your mom's office. It's like
I know.
70s it, glorious with these like teeny,
totally.
Tiny little
it's
shorts.
It's early 80s. To be honest, it's early 80s. Dude, and my hair was straight blonde. Can you believe that?
Anyway, like it's not the time to like remind everyone of what you've accomplished as this wonderful adult. Like it's just the time to let them see you the way that they see you. And I think that my mother still interacts with me as if I'm about 11. And that's okay. It bugs me sometimes, but I need to let it be okay. So my coping strategy for that is just have a sense of humor and don't get defensive about how adult and important you are. That's not a good recipe for family fun.
Cool. So we talked about families and the hierarchy, right? Parents and siblings. That's one. There's three others. So we kind of have a 4-point outline, and then we will dive into more strategies. First one was hierarchy. The second one is the cultural expectations and rules of behavior. Talk about those.
Yeah. So again, this sense of a family as a system, there are things that happen in the system that separate it from other systems. So religious practices, political convictions, conversation topics that are allowed versus conversation topics that are taboo, the kinds of food or beverage that people drink within the family. And, you know, when you're a kid growing up, like your parents serve you the kind of food that they serve you, and they either pray before the meal or they don't pray before the meal, or they listen to Rush Limbaugh on the radio when they're driving you to school, or they don't. And you don't have any choices about that as a kid. But when you're going back into, again, the system as an adult, your preferences may have changed. And I feel this whenever I am eating with my family. My dad this year for Christmas wasn't a Christmas present, but just he brought to the house this like Costco sized vat of mixed greens. And he's like, I brought some food for you. And it was clear that he had realized that since I had left his home, I started eating more green vegetables. But it was just this like small little notice of, oh, I'm different as an adult than I was as a kid. And we as our family have chosen some different politics and religious practices and food and cultural norms that exist in our household that are different than our families growing up.
Yeah. And that brings up the inevitable clash of that, right? Where there's this awkwardness of like, oh, wait, we don't do that anymore like we used to, or you're going to bring up religious or political topic or just even an everyday thing that we don't agree with, and you're going to assume we do agree with it, or you're going to suggest an entire meal with absolutely nothing green on the plate, and that doesn't necessarily work for us. So obviously that may feel awkward in the moment or whatever. How does someone deal with that?
It helps me to think about this as a cultural transition. So when I am traveling to Vietnam and I'm served pho for breakfast, I just sort of roll with it. And normally I don't have soup for breakfast in America, but pho is fabulous. So I just sort of roll with it and know that even though your family feels like it should be familiar, it might not be anymore. You know, I grew up in a community, not just my nuclear family, but a community of pretty staunch conservative Republicans. And that was just assumed of all of the kids and all of the grownups in the community of people that I grew up in. And it's no longer a safe assumption in my family that everyone has the same political convictions. And so when I'm with my family, I sort of am curious and listen to, you know, their differing perspectives and really, again, do my best not to be defensive or try to convince them that they should be having Cheerios for breakfast instead of pho because it's not their cultural norm. And who am I to insist that it is or that it should be? Does that answer your question?
It does.
Appreciate diversity, I guess.
For sure. It's like, yeah, it's like not dreading it going into it and then taking a deep breath and just figuring that things that are maybe different than the way you do it today don't need to necessarily change. So that was the second point. It was about cultural expectations and rules of behavior. The third one is there are rules about how connected people are. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, this is kind of a continuum upon which people in the mental health community might seek to understand families. And on one end of the continuum is what you call an enmeshed family, where there's lots of shared emotional experience between the different members of the family. There's lots of sharing. There's lots of like, I kind of think of this as like an open door policy in the house. Like the kids and the parents are all sort of going in and out of everybody's bedroom and sort of hanging out. And there's a lot of emotional interaction between all the members of the family. They're all very close. There are some pros and cons to that for sure that are beyond probably the scope of this conversation. But then on the other end of the spectrum.
Wait, hold up. That's just for the record. That's how I grew up. Like it was the family being very close. Yep. And speaking freely, and a lot of shared experiences is the way. Like we all went to my brother's football games, and then everybody came to my track meets, and we interacted in a very open, just an open way, and had a lot of conversations about what the family was going through.
And there was a shared sense of we're all in this together, whether it's your track meet or your brother's football game or your dad's business Christmas event. Everybody is involved and part of it and has sort of feelings about it as well as an expectation to participate.
So that's the enmeshed, which sounds a little negative, but growing up, it, to be honest, it actually was kind of cool. Like I felt like everybody cared about what I was doing from the time that I was 5 until I moved out of the house. It was people are invested in my spelling bees, in my whatever it is, homework, my track meets, my athletic career, everything.
And again, this exists on a continuum, so it's not a category. And, you know, I think you had a very connected family. And the meshed can get real messy, though, especially if the difficult thing about being in an enmeshed family is if you want to leave, if you grow up and you realize I want to go my own way and I don't want everyone in the family to have so much sway or influence over what I decide to do. And I think the other kind of scary thing that can happen is that members of the family, maybe a mother and child, can't differentiate their own emotions from each other. So this is the mother who's like way overly invested in her daughter's cheerleading career and goes to crazy lengths to make sure that that kid is successful, not because of the kid's feelings, but because of the mother's feelings, but they can't tell the difference between them.
Yeah, that makes sense. And that wasn't the extent of us.
I just want to make that point really clear. Yeah. Like these are the opposite ends of the spectrum and families lean toward one end or another, but they're both good and bad. Being in the middle or, you know, toward the middle, a little more centrist is desirable.
Is the best, right. So enmeshed was one end, and then the other side is?
The other side is disengaged, which is a very individuated family, where each member of the family is doing their own activities. They're very distinct. They have very distinct emotions. These families also tend to be quite hierarchical. And my family was a little bit more like this. Like my parents didn't sit down with me and chat about the gossip that was happening with my friends in seventh grade. And when I wanted to run for student council, I figured out how to do that by myself. And when I had track meets, sometimes they'd come if they were close, but mostly not. So it just impresses upon, you know, the skills that you learn in a disengaged family are a lot of autonomy, but not necessarily a lot of emotional connection.
See, and that's what I like about this episode is that we have some pieces that are like directly applicable to dealing with family and handling everything in the context of a holiday and coming back and revisiting. And this one, I'm not sure how much it matters. It's just good to know, like, were you enmeshed or were you disengaged? Where were you on that continuum? Do you feel like this impacts how you would interact with your family if you went back and revisited them 20 years later at a beach house in Santa Cruz?
Well, I definitely do, especially because you and I now have our own family and we're on a different place in this continuum than either of our families of origin. So we're definitely less disengaged and less enmeshed. I think we're more in the middle. And so for me to go and visit your family, it kind of feels like everyone's all up in my business. And I feel my own individuation coming out strong because I grew up in a different kind of family. So, but if I don't know why that's happening or don't sort of have a handle on that, then it would be easy for me to withdraw or distance myself from your family without understanding why I was uncomfortable. That it's not that they're bad people. They just have a different way of doing family than I'm used to.
Totally. And that's the thing, I think, you know, especially as you get married and another family, your spouse's family has a different system. It's not this terrible, horrible, no good, very bad thing. It winds up being, oh, there really is. It's crazy that there tends to be some pretty simple descriptions of this stuff that is just a continuum, you know, whether it's, we talked about hierarchy with parents and siblings, talk about cultural expectations, and we talked about how connected people are in enmeshed and disengaged. And it really is just this, where you are in this continuum and understanding that your family presently, your family when you growing up and your spouse's family may be very different, it can lend you that anthropological mindset of, oh, this actually isn't terrible. This is just different. And like you said, they serve me pho for breakfast and I'm just going to eat it. I wouldn't do that normally, but I'm just going to accept it as a different way of being. And there's a fourth piece, right? So we've touched on three of them. The fourth piece is about rules about how structured the family is. Why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, this one's kind of fun to talk about because, again, our families are super opposite in this. And here are the two ends of the continuum. One is rigid and the other is chaotic. So I came from a very rigid family where we ate dinner at 5:30 every day for my whole life.
And what happened if someone happened to call, let's say a friend happened to call at 5:35?
There was no answering the phone during dinner time. And there was like shaming and grumping and like my dad would yell about it or, you know, at least like, why is this person calling at dinner time? You know, like it should be just universally understood that no one should make phone calls at 5:30.
Right. That everyone ate dinner at 5:30 Pacific.
So very, very rigid. Things were in a place. They had a place. There was a high level of organization. And there were lots of rules that governed how the family operated. And those rules were enforced very strictly. And then your family on the opposite end goes toward this more chaotic style, which is like, what, at 8, 9, 10, you were at home by yourself, like making peanut butter and jelly. And then maybe your mom shows up around like 8:30 and your dad comes around 9 and people are sort of filtering in and out. There's like no dinner time. There's no dining room table to eat at. Like people just sort of grab their food and squat wherever. Like
that's not totally correct, but yeah, it is a pretty good picture.
There was no furniture.
No, there was furniture. So yes, you're right. Actually, I learned to make mac and cheese when I was 9. I did make PB&J when I was 8 or 9. And there were parents around, but things became more chaotic as I got older. I'll put it that way. So yeah, you're right. It's very, very different. You know, in terms of when I was really young, we did actually all eat dinner together. And then as I got older, things, everybody just went their separate ways. And we kind of just managed and you did your thing, you know. And we have our oldest now is 10 and he's older than I was when I was like arriving home after school on my own. And we didn't even have latchkeys back then because we lived in the country. I would just get off the bus and I'd walk this like quarter mile driveway and I'd walk into the house and be like, all right, I'm here on my own. And everybody trusted me not to burn the house down, eat rat poison, drowned in the pool, you know, just these basic fundamental things that like you expect of a kid. So I was definitely, kind of managing things on my own at that point.
But things were also very fluid in your house. Like you could kind of watch what you want and kind of go to bed when you wanted and kind of eat what you want versus at my house, dinner 5:30, bedtime 8:30 or 9 or 10 if you were in high school. Like there was this structure that was pretty strictly.
And in high school?
Yeah. It's amazing. Hey. It's amazing I'm as cool as I am.
I didn't know you back then.
My junior year, we really, really had to negotiate hard for 10:30.
10:30.
It's true.
I think when I was a junior, I may have been out till 2 multiple times.
Yeah, you had no. It's like, come and go when you want.
It's different also with
Oh, don't even go. Don't even say what you were going to say.
It's different also when you're as cool as I am. That's
right. All right. We're like blabbing on really long here. But I think the bottom line is that if you like us are feeling a little post-holiday non-alcohol related hangover, it's because that, again, despite how great your family might be, re-entering that system that you lived in when you were a child can sort of shake you up a little bit. Our adult development takes us out of our nuclear families and we find new ways to live. We find new cultures, new preferences, new ways of doing things and organizing our new families. And so when we kind of experience the culture shock of getting pulled back into the old structure or sort of fighting against the old structure, it can definitely cause some tension and some emotional angst to go along with your Christmas ham.
And so we have some strategies, five of them to be exact, for staying sane and how to cope if this stuff is stressful. Sometimes going back and seeing family is awesome, and other times, you know, it can be stressful. And like you said, maybe it's a little bit late to do it for holiday parties because we're past the first of the year, but maybe you could use it for Super Bowl parties or your trip back over the summer or even next year, because podcasts are timeless. So kick us off. What's our first strategy?
I think just have a heads up that it might be trickier than you think. Sometimes it feels like it's going to be so great to return to something familiar or to see these people that you deeply love. And yes, it will be great, but there's always going to be something that's a little bit tricky that causes a little bit of tension. So have a heads up about that. Make a plan for it. Like, give yourself some grace, give yourself some room, give your spouse some room, and take space when you need it, which is sort of the second strategy. But again, sort of first is be aware that you might need some space. And then the second is to take some space.
Yeah, I think being aware that you're going to need some space is big for me. It's like identifying in advance, okay, this is what's going to happen. And I'm an anthropologist and I'm going to observe and I'm going to take kind of a scientific view of, this is not the way I do it. And I'm not going to freak out because things are a little different or because someone said something that I don't agree with, because I don't have to live under that for 100 years, right? I don't have to eat pho every day, although I really like pho, but I don't have to eat it every day for breakfast for 100 years. I have to do it this once. You know, I have to eat something, a dinner that has no greens on it once. So I'm going to zip my mouth and I'm going to be an anthropologist and I'm going to observe, this is how far I've come. This is where I am. Specific examples of taking space when you need it, I think, come back to you going that second day and buying paints and, in essence,
I'm here and I'm not here.
Yeah. But I mean, immersing yourself, that was your space, right? Was to create art. And we all, you and I also went for walks and runs every day. And right now in Minneapolis, it's a little chilly to do that. We've carved out a few of them here and there. But in Santa Cruz, you and I individually were going for multiple per day. And I think that was a big thing where I'd be like, Sherry, take off, like go, you know, do this thing. I'm going to handle the kids, or we're just going to manage the house together with your family. And you would do the same. And we had a lot of flexibility. I think we lended each other a lot of flexibility and kind of got each other's back in this one.
Yeah, I think it's pretty futile, speaking of coping strategies, to try to change the way that your family of origin operates.
Yeah, that's kind of the third piece here, right? The first strategy is like, be aware that things are going to be weird. The second is to take space. And the third is, don't try to change things.
I came home from college. My parents are from the Midwest, and I came home from college with an avocado and an artichoke. And these were both foods that did not exist in my family up until I went to college. And I brought them back and I was like explaining the artichoke to my parents, and I cooked it and I like made the sauce, and they were just like, what is this thing? Why would we spend all this time doing this for this? Like, it was just a foreign entity. And I was like, okay, I like artichokes and I'm going to decide to like artichokes, but you guys don't, and you're not going to, and you don't get them and they're not intriguing. So we're just going to let that be, you know, whether it's politics or religion or artichokes, like letting your family of origin, letting the people in your family have the space to be different from you and to realize that your journey into adulthood has taken you in different directions and to not sweat it.
That's right. And you're probably not going to change your parents who are 20 or 30 years older than you. Because let me tell you, as your elder, anyone who's listening to this podcast, I'm probably older than you. You don't change nearly as well as you get older. So what's our fourth strategy for staying sane?
I think also not to be defensive about the structures that you've implemented. You know, we've made different decisions than our parents made about parenting and things that we do or don't do with our kids. And so I think there are times, maybe especially with your family, just because, you know, it's more foreign to me, that I kind of want to make like a public service announcement and just be like, look, this is why I do this thing with my kids. And this is my rationale. And so I want to like constantly explain myself, and it's just not helpful or important. And I think it's this defensiveness in me that is, it gets in the way of having a comfortable and warm relationship if I'm overly attached to everyone approving of me for the things that I do that are different than their convictions and the way that they have chosen to run their family. So don't be defensive about how you've implemented your life.
Yeah, I think that's the big deal, right? It's like going into it, preparing yourself, and thinking about how to be proud of the decisions you've made and move on with them. What's our fifth strategy for staying sane?
Especially if you're now part of a new family, if you have a partner and children, it's important to take some time with your partner and maybe your kids as appropriate to kind of talk about the differences in your family and then the family that you came from, your family of origin. I know as we have talked and just created more shared connection between the two of us, as we reflect on the differences between our current family and both of our families of origin, that's been important both to kind of give space to express like, whoa, this is hard. This is weird. These people are kind of crazy. I love them, but I don't really understand them. And to help us clarify and solidify, like, okay, we're okay with doing things differently in our life, in our nuclear family. So, Mom, if you're listening, I love you. You're the best.
I love you too. I love you too, Mom. You are the best. Thank you
we
for raising me.
We love spending time with you.
Putting up with all my crap.
In smaller doses.
I was a jerk, and now...
And we're sorry about all the tattoos.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because do you realize in our parents' day, like, tattoos were...
So I have a new tattoo that I've been getting work done on over the past couple of months. And it's like a fairly large tattoo. It takes up like a quarter of my back. And my mom saw it at Christmas and she was just like, come here. I have to... What have you done here? You
know, almost hyperventilated.
She's like trying to be cool. She's trying to be like, yeah. Tell me about it.
But she said, what have you done here is the best
is
way
this?
To describe. Yes.
So my mom now thinks I'm in a biker gang, but it's.
Yeah, that's not how it works these days.
But again, it's pointless to try to explain to her that I'm a psychologist totally. And very upstanding and accomplished.
Right. Do you realize that was, yeah, in the 50s or the 60s, perhaps getting a tattoo was a signal of being in a biker gang. However, these days, even people with PhDs get tattoos.
Love you, Mom. Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder. Our theme song is A New Beginning by bensound.com, used under Creative Commons.